Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Deborah Appleman is our guest this morning. She has written a book called Words No Bars Can Hold, Literacy Learning in Prison, and she's going to be doing a virtual reading, I believe. And today's Thursday. For Zenith Bookstore. Deborah, I've got to double check the details with you on this because, of course, everything is virtual these days and we're doing all of this this stuff via Zoom and FaceTime and FaceTime Live and Facebook Live and that sort of thing. Good morning, Deborah. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's great to be with you this morning.
So you will be doing a reading. And it's going to be like a Zoom thing for Zenith Books?
I think we're still kind of working out the details. Things change by the day, but we're hoping to have something like that happen. We were going to be doing something in person, but, you know, the world has completely changed. So we're working on being able to interact with folks in a virtual way, but I don't have the time details or anything like that, unfortunately, for your listeners yet.
There is a link to the Facebook event. We'll get that link set up on our webpage, and I'm sure everything will be updated there. It'll be easy for folks to find out how it's going. See, let me ask you a question about this. Some authors are writers and not actors, or for example, or dancers, because they're shy persons and they're not necessarily interested in getting up in front of a whole bunch of people and making a big production out of themselves. What is it like for a writer to do a reading, and is a reading easier, less stressful, or more stressful if you find that you're doing it virtually instead of being in front of a crowd of people?
Well, it's a fascinating question, Lisa. And what's different for me is I'm actually a teacher first and then a writer. So I've been a teacher for four decades, first as a high school teacher, and I'm currently a professor at Carleton College. So I am a true extrovert, and I really appreciate the energy that's given to me by people and my interaction with people. And it's actually been a challenge throughout my professional life to put myself in isolation to do the kind of work that you need to do as a writer. So actually, readings give me the same kind of energy that I would get in a classroom. Whereas this online teaching has been quite a challenge. Later this morning, I'm Zooming with my Introduction to Educational Studies class for Carleton College, and it feels really, really different to not be able to interact with them. So I don't mind the social interaction. In fact, it's what I crave.
I'm curious, too, about this idea of energy and interpersonal energy, because in to some extent it's a psychological construct, and if I'm having a Zoom conference with my coworkers, I know these people. Am I just so self-conscious about the medium? You know, do you find as you're teaching that perhaps you're so conscious of the medium that that's what seems to disrupt this flow of interpersonal energy? And that if we could just get past the idea that it's cameras and we're looking at them on a screen, that we'd be able to reconnect to them? Or is there something hardwired into our brains that we actually have to, our brains have to tell us that person is standing in front of us before we can get that connection?
Well, there was an interesting article about it this morning in the New York Times about why Zoom is so tiring and so fatiguing. And one of the things that's posited is that one of the things that's hardwired in our brain is the ability to do mimicry, the ability we almost unconsciously, when we're with someone, mirror how they're feeling back to them so that they know that we're being able to read them. And as a teacher, one of the things that's really important, whether I'm teaching in a classroom at Carleton or in a prison, which is what the book is about, that you rely on the ability to read the room. And the problem with Zoom is everybody's up there kind of like the Hollywood Squares or the Brady Bunch
exactly.
on your screen. And one of the issues is, partly because of the technology, that you're not really getting people the way they really are. Sometimes they freeze. The camera angle isn't quite right, so they're not quite looking at you. I had a class yesterday, and I had to tell the student to change his the position of his computer because I was just looking at the top of his baseball cap, and that wasn't really helping us talk very much. So I think that part of it is the technological aspects of it that make it really difficult. So I think that, you know, they say that people who are extroverted get their energy from other people and find it tiring to be alone, and people who are introverted get their energy alone and find it tiring to be with other people. And Zoom is in this sort of middle ground where you're with people, but you really aren't. And you're alone, but you're really not.
So it makes everybody tired.
I think a performative quality to it that can also be really fatiguing as well. And much less satisfying. It's kind of like kissing through gauze or something. It's just not quite the real thing.
Let's talk about a happier time in your life. When you were talking with your students and dealing with your students face-to-face, the idea of teaching literature to empower prison inmates. I can imagine so much eye-rolling going on when you suggested, oh, hey, this is something that I would like to do. Because there are so many stereotypes and so many things that people just think they know about folks who are in prison. And, boy, they're not going to have anybody tell them anything different. Was that the case for you?
It feels to me, I mean, I think that we are careful about the company that we keep, which is brought into sharper relief during these highly partisan, politicized times. I think that, you know, we keep company with people who sometimes share the same moral compass that we do, because those are the same values that we have. So I was fortunate that the people that I work with and my friends and family kind of believed in the dignity of all human beings and the importance and value of learning, especially liberal arts learning. And so they were pretty open-minded about it. So I didn't really get any pushback. I think most of the pushback was, at least initially, from some prison officials who were skeptical about what it was that these incarcerated people deserved. And that's understandable, since their job is to keep them incarcerated and to, you know, keep everyone safe. And so because their primary role is to keep them in this imprisoned, powerless role, and my job is to, in some ways, at least offer them some liberatory education that makes them feel more human. Some of us are working toward humanizing them, and some of us are working toward dehumanizing them. So that's where the conflict that I experienced came about.
And I was assuming, I guess I was thinking about prison officials.
Right.
Only because I think when you work in an environment where you are dealing with, I'm thinking about, you know, police officers to an extent also, when you are dealing with people that are consistently making the worst choices,
right,
that are perhaps out to hurt other people, I think it's hard for someone to do that work without being changed by that work and without feeling like, I know these people and I know what they're about, and, you know, you're wasting your time trying to make them human. What did you find when you came into your courses, your first courses with these inmates?
Yeah, so, I mean, Brian Stevenson quotes this in Just Mercy, and one of my incarcerated students does too. They're saying everyone's better than the worst they've ever done. I think it's true that we all have done things that we regret, and that's not all of who we are. It's a part of who we are. So what I found when I went into the prison was human beings that had done bad things and were still human beings and were trying to rebuild a sense of themselves and sometimes to try to make up for what it was that they did. In Minnesota, we do not have capital punishment, which means that we keep alive people who have been convicted of doing bad things. And if we're, as a society, going to keep someone alive, then the question that I ask is, how can we keep them human and make them even more human? So I was actually surprised to find that they were respectful, reverent, engaged, intelligent, interested in learning, polite. It was really eye-opening, and teaching them was absolutely and is absolutely a wonderful thing and very rewarding.
Did you ever have the opportunity to talk with anyone and to ask them, in essence, you're respectful and you're engaged and you're polite and you're interested in learning? Was this you outside of this prison? Would you have ever been this way outside of this prison?
Yeah, I especially asked people who were really good learners and really good students. I would say to them, what happened to you in high school? Why didn't this spark and love of learning come up for you in high school? How can you have been kind of entranced and engaged by the invitation to learn so late after all of this has happened? And it's hard for me to be able to discern. I'm seeing them in a different context, and I'm seeing them in the aftermath. So it's hard for me to kind of generalize the way they are with me to the way they are on the outside. Most of the people that I've met, not people who were kind of hardened criminals with anger management problems, who were sociopaths or psychopaths, the people that I've met are people who had, one of my incarcerated students says, 30 seconds, 30 years, had moments of anger, moments of rage, and access to something that would harm someone. And I'm not trying to belittle it in any way, but I don't think that their disposition is naturally, for most of them, a criminal or negative disposition. It's about something that happened that changes the course of the rest of your life.
What a fascinating book. What a fascinating project. And what a fascinating conversation it will be this evening for folks to have the opportunity to listen to you read and to ask you questions about your experience. I'm sure that the reading people will enjoy, but I'm sure what they're really going to like is the opportunity to listen to you talk about these people and bring them to life for the rest of us. Deborah, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. I wish we had more time, but I'm so grateful you took the time that you did for us. Thank you very much, very much.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate it. Take care.
Deborah Appleman, our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads. She's going to be doing a virtual event through Zenith Bookstore this evening from 7 to 8:30, and she'll be talking about her new book, Words No Bars Can Hold, Literacy Learning in Prison. We'll get a link set up on our website so it'll be easy to find the information to attend that virtual event also, if you wish. Minnesota Reads on KUMD is produced with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.